From Old Mecklenburg Brewery, this is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. It seems like overnight, Charlotte has gone from being a town where exotic beer was a can of Coors as opposed to Budweiser, to a town with an exploding locally brewed craft beer scene. Interest in beer has seemingly never been higher, and hardly a week goes by without a new local brewer opening up shop or an older local operation expanding, like this one, and moving into new, larger headquarters. Not only that, the beer being brewed and consumed here is good, award-winning in some cases. So we thought it was time to take another look at what is clearly not a fad, but certainly a phenomenon. We chose Old Mecklenburg Brewery as the location for this program because they are the oldest operating Charlotte brewery and have just opened the location in which we find ourselves this hour. It's twice as large as their original spot, which demonstrates growth needed to meet increasing demand. Ryan Self is a craft beer enthusiast who has spent the last 5 years doing every conceivable job here at Old Mecklenburg Brewery. Right now, he is director of sales. I don't think that job needs any help, quite honestly. You seem to be doing okay. Thanks for lending us the space and joining us tonight. Appreciate it.
Absolutely, Mike.
You have a full house here tonight. Is it like this every night at this hour?
Well, the show has drawn a little bit of its own audience, but we've got a good crowd most evenings, yes.
Drink up, FAE people, drink up. Ryan Self is a craft beer enthusiast. Well, I've already said that, haven't I?
Yes, you have.
Todd Ford has deep roots in the Charlotte Home Brewers Guild and is the owner and head of production at Nodab Brewing Company, which opened just 3 years ago in North Davidson neighborhood. Welcome to you.
Thank you. We're happy to be here, and we're just happy for the trail that was blazed by Old Mecklenburg before us. They made it a lot easier to move into town and be successful doing what we like to do, making beer for our friends.
You guys really are friends. We're going to talk about that, because this is odd to me, that you're not enemies and constantly doing battle
that
with
That comes
you.
After two beers.
Okay. Yeah. Jason Glunt is owner of Salud Beer Shop. That's a bottle shop in North Davidson. They started that 2 years ago to promote local and regional craft beers. Today they have 12 beers on tap and hundreds of craft beers, bottles and cans from all over the world. Thank you for being here as well.
Yes, thank you for having me. And we love selling the local beers brewed by these fine gentlemen next to me.
Do the local beers, I should probably save this question for later, but do the local beers sell as well as some of these more exotic beers from around the world?
Oh, yeah. Our top seller is Hop Dropper and Roll Cans, and Noda is 10 blocks away.
Wow. Good
by far our top seller.
Good news. And Daniel Hardis is a beer writer and author of Charlotte Beer, A History of Brewing in the Queen City, and of Beer Lovers, The Carolinas, which is not a mistake. That's actually the title.
That's right.
He's also editor of CharlotteBeer.com, voted Charlotte's best local blogger by Creative Loafing Readers, best local Twitterer by Charlotte Magazine, and is a beer columnist for the Charlotte Observer. As newspapers struggled to stay in business, they've hired a beer guy to write for them.
Right, it's a popular subject, and people want to hear more about it.
Well, obviously that's true. I'm going to start with you because Old Mecklenburg Brewery opened in 2009, and they are the oldest currently continuously operating brewery.
That's right.
Nodab Brewing Company opened in 2011. Salud Beer Shop opened in 2012. That makes the interest in beer, or this rising interest in beer, sound a little bit like it's new and a fad, but you've done some research, and you go all the way back to the 1700s. In fact, to about a guy we talked to about earlier this week, Captain James Jack, whose statue is out in front of CPCC. Who was James Jack, and why is he important to beer?
Well, James Jack was a tavern keeper, so a lot of people don't know that, but that's sort of the tie-in into why OMB has a beer named after him, in addition to just being a great local figure. He delivered the Mecklenburg Declaration of Independence to Philadelphia. So that's kind of his claim to fame, but he was also a tavern keeper in the 1700s.
Was he serving Old Mecklenburg or?
No. It was, you know, what you would liken to homebrew today. Every tavern kind of brewed their own beer. A lot of houses brewed their own beer.
And this is back in a time when his tavern was right off the square. There were only 20 buildings in town,
right,
and his was one of them. It has been said many times by many people that that beer is liquid bread, which is why you should drink it as fresh as possible, because you don't want day-old bread. You want fresh bread, fresh beer. And you also found instances, Daniel, in your book, of Charlotte bakeries that that were brewing award-winning beer several years ago. When was this?
The early 90s. There were kind of a host of breweries here in the early 90s, and most kind of puttered out around 2000. But there was one in particular called the Mill Bakery, Eatery, and Brewery, and it was a chain. I think there were around six or seven at its peak, and they had a location here in Charlotte. They all brewed the same beers, however, they kind of had a local name. Hornet Tail Pale Ale, I think, was the name of the award-winning one here. So breweries like that certainly predated the current scene. The nation on the whole, let alone Charlotte, just wasn't ready for it. And, again, most kind of shut their doors around 2000 or a little after that.
And we're going to talk about that because we seem to have had a moment in time in the 90s when there were several restaurants that had, you know, brewing stations in the back, all these glass windows, you could see them brewing their own beer. And then they went away, and then you guys filled the vacuum, so to speak. But we'll talk about that a little bit later on, I think. But how many different breweries have there been post-Prohibition in Charlotte?
I've never actually added it up. If you're including today's group, I'd say the number's probably around 20, you know. Something like that.
And how many today? 10? 15?
Yeah, around 10 today in Mecklenburg County proper. We've got more in, you know, north of the city in Cornelius and Lake Norman, Mooresville.
So Old Mecklenburg Brewery opened its doors in 2009, and that was after places like South End Brewery, and there were a couple of other restaurant brewers decided hops either moved away or threw in the towel. What made your owner, the guy who started this place, John Marino, feel that 2009, you know, I'm gonna chuck everything I'm doing, and I'm gonna open this brewery. What made him think that 2009 was the right time for this?
It takes a certain kind of insanity to say where others have failed, I will succeed. And thankfully, that was John's mindset. And also, at the time we opened, Charlotte was the biggest city in the country without its own local brewery.
The biggest without.
That's right.
Wow.
So when we opened up, and as you can tell by the success of our peers, it was a thirsty city. It was ready for a local beer that could be something they called their hometown product, something to be proud of. So when we opened, we've obviously grown pretty quickly. Noda's grown pretty quickly. Every brewery that's opened up has experienced a lot of success, and we've seen that the demand in the city is so great. There's no cannibalization of each other. It's all just growth and sort of eliminating some of those national brands and flavor of drinking beers made right here in people's hometown.
Well, Daniel says we are living in the golden age of craft beers in Charlotte. Does everybody agree with that?
I should say so, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
Yes.
Even if you didn't brew it, would you say that?
Yeah, I think so. We're deep in the industry. Sometimes it's hard for us to take a perspective that's accurate within the industry. We just know that the sales are increasing. We're being interviewed more often. We don't often know why. You know, we're just like everybody else. We're going to work doing what we want to do, but it just happens to be a very popular time now to be a brewer.
Why? What is driving the popularity? Because it wouldn't work if people weren't buying the beer and coming to these taverns and coming to the breweries themselves and doing. What's driving it? What's happening here?
Well, we all have our own individual theories. I think part of mine, it's probably multiple things right now that are driving the success of craft beer in Charlotte. And just as Ryan said, in 2009, there were no breweries, local breweries. So Charlotte, being a large metropolitan city at that time with success in banking and airlines and things like that, was ready to establish its identity. They had a basketball team at that time, a football team. They were ready to establish what other cities had done, too. And I think they were looking also at the fact that at about that time, people were taking more closer look at what they were eating, the food products that they were putting in their body. Were they locally grown? Were they handled properly? And so there was a more push right at that particular time to eat fresh ingredients that people had a connection to. And what better connection if you know that the product's made, you know, right down the street from you and made by one of your neighbors?
Mm. Go ahead.
I think Todd's right. I think going back to the analogy you used earlier about beer as bread, something we always say here at OMB is, you know, the national American light beers are sort of the Wonder Bread of beers, which is they're always the same. Consistency is their forte. But it's sort of strange to think that you can have it for a year and have it not change at all. That makes you wonder what's in that product. Local craft beer is the baker down the street. It is a perishable product. It's a product that's going to go bad, but when it's on, it's as good as anything is going to be.
Jason Glunt, you own a bottle shop. That's a new term. I didn't know that until today, that there are places called bottle shops, and that's because you're selling bottled beer,
yes,
correct? And,
yes.
And on-tap beer as well. Yep. This interest in beer must have been the reason you thought it was a good time to open your shop, right? You're not the only one in town.
Yeah, I mean, we opened, you know, obviously OMB, Noda opened before us. And I lived in Noda at the time. I said, we have beer bars, we have breweries. There is no store, retail, that you can come hang out and just talk about beer and have a pint or two while you shop.
So you're kind of like people know about wine shops and little wine bars. You're kind of like a wine bar for beer.
We're a wine bar for beer. We do not carry wine.
But you can go into any bar and get beer. So how do you set yourselves apart? How do people know to find you? Are these the connoisseurs that are really after the best available beers?
Yes. I mean, you have a mix. And I've noticed the 2.5 years we've been open, you have, of course, the connoisseurs or the so-called beer nerds that come in and they look for the rarest of the rare. But you also have neighborhood people that are interested, and you try to educate them as much as you can on new styles of beer or how this is made. Or a lot of people, you know, don't realize the process, and then they appreciate it over time. They go, man, this is not easy. It's not easy to make a consistent, good product.
Right.
With care, that people who care about the product are doing.
Well, before we started, Ryan took me through the new brewing, I don't know what you call it, the brewery, I guess. That's what it's called, right?
Sure.
And all these enormous tanks are in there. And I know, Todd, that you were a home brewer before you got into the Noda business and opened your own big brewery. What is it like to be told that the home brews you are making are really, really good? And then you get the idea, you know, if they're really that good, maybe I should make them for the mass market. And you invest a gazillion dollars in what it takes to do that. What do you have to do to scale that product up to be able to produce the numbers of gallons that you have to produce and keep it the same?
Well, it's funny you should say that, because that was exactly what my wife said to me. Your beers are great. Everybody loves them. But I couldn't help but think that I was giving my beers to all my friends and giving a product away. How often are they going to say they don't like it, right? So having them pay for it is certainly more of a testament to the quality of the product. It is difficult to step up from home brewing sizes to production sizes, and the considerations and the attention to detail is totally different. At that particular time, we knew we didn't have the knowledge that we needed to make that step without some help, so we hired a professional brewer to come in and work with us to make sure that when we were scaling up recipes, some ingredients scale up linearly while others are more exponentially. So we wanted to make sure that our recipes did transform over, and then we did recognize, too, that when we did make those recipes on our big system for the first few times, there were going to be some inconsistencies. And thankfully, our friends in Charlotte recognized that. As we had an opportunity to talk to them when they visited us, we'd explain why our beers were slightly different, you know, the third week versus the fourth week. But we also explained to them that our goal was to make sure that there'd be consistency. And that's what we strive for every day.
Todd Ford is owner and head of production at Noda Brewing Company. Ryan Self is director of sales at OMB, Old Mecklenburg Brewery. Jason Glunt is with us, the owner of Salud Beer Shop. And Daniel Hardis, a writer about beer. He's everywhere in town writing about beer. And we're going to take a break and come back and talk more about beer on Charlotte Talks here on WFAE.
Support for this special edition of Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Creative Loafing's 27th annual Best of Charlotte event, Friday, October 3rd at Wells Fargo Atrium Uptown. Presenting a night of craft cocktails and food from the Best of Charlotte area restaurants. Tickets at clclt.com. And Diamonds Direct South Park, offering certified diamonds, more than 5,000 engagement ring mountings, pearls, and colored gemstones. Sharon Road, across from South Park Mall. Diamonds-direct.com. Coming up Monday on Charlotte Talks, the number of independent voters has nearly doubled in North Carolina in the past decade. This surge in independents makes North Carolina one of the premier battleground states in electoral politics. On the next edition of Charlotte Talks, guest host Michael Tomczyk and a panel of experts will look at who those voters are and discuss how they could swing this November's election. North Carolina gone purple when Charlotte talks Monday at 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup. Pressure mounts on Congress to pass a new authorization for strikes against ISIS. A White House breach prompts a review of Secret Service protocol. And President Obama announces an executive order on climate change.
Join the Diane Rehm Show and the News Roundup this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking beer from Old Mecklenburg Brewery here on Yancey Street or Yancey Road. Yancey, what city is it?
Yancey Road.
Yancey Road, just off in the south end, just off of Old Pineville Road with Ryan Self from Old Mecklenburg Brewery. He's been a nice host. Gave us beer to drink and everything. Todd Ford with Noda Brewing Company, Jason Glunt from Salute Beer Shop, and Daniel Hardis, who writes about beer. Let's get a little basic here for just a second. Let's get a definition, because there are a lot of home brewers out there in our listening audience, and one of our producers is a home brewer of beer, and you started that way, Todd, who create these craft beers, these small batches of beer, which I think everybody would call a craft beer. But when you scale it up to the size of Old Mecklenburg or Noda Brewery or some of the other breweries, does it cease to be a craft beer? At what point does it cease to be a craft beer and become a Coors or Miller Lite or a mass-produced entity?
Mike, we've been discussing that even within our industry, and the consensus is it changes. For the longest period of time, we delineated the Brewers Association, which is an advocate for craft beer brewers in the United States. They pretty much pegged the limit of craft beer at 2 million barrels a year. And 2 million barrels, a barrel's 31 gallons in the United States. 2 million barrels is a lot of beer.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially what they've done is they've moved that limit up a bit in order to keep manufacturers like Boston Beer Company, known for their Sam Adams brand, and also Yingling, to keep them in the craft category. So I think they see that there's benefit to doing that and keeping them in the craft category.
But what makes it a craft beer? Is it the attention to detail? Is it the magic recipe? Is it because we have one brewer like we have one winemaker at a vineyard whose hand is in everything and he's put his personal touch on it? What is it?
I think it has a lot to do with the fact that the recipe is crafted many times without consideration for the expensive ingredients that we're using. A lot of times we price our products probably at a lower rate than we should. But we also recognize, too, that we're competing in a marketplace that has a lot of variety and a lot of choices. So I think we're looking at ingredients that cost a lot. We're looking at processes that might be a little more old school. Our beer doesn't come out of the tank in 7 days like some of the other breweries do, too.
And I would say also the craft breweries don't add protein to their beer to create retention of the head of the beer, which some of the macro breweries have to do because they have to put chemicals in their beer to keep it look like a beer. Otherwise, it won't look like a beer. A big beer is called Beechwood Age, a.k.a. it's sawdust that they basically put. I mean,
it's a major brand that does that. I remember the commercials.
I mean, it's a difference between, like we said earlier, the analogy of the bakery. I mean, you got some huge corporation just churning out bread with thousands of people there. There's no soul. There's no heart, no love going into that. No, you know, these people here are putting blood, sweat, and tears into their beer. And if there's something wrong with their beer, and they hate to do this, but they're going to dump the beer if it's not up to their standards.
Well, Ryan, you were telling me as we were walking through the brewery that if something comes out and it doesn't taste right, it's a little off, you dump the whole thing. And that's
absolutely
a lot of money going literally down the drain.
It is, but you've only got one good name. So if a batch isn't to your standards, you dump it. You hope your customers, like Jason, are understanding, and you move on from there. I think if you substitute the word artisanal for craft, I think you get a much better idea of how to get a sort of a sniff test of what's craft and what's not. Mm-hmm. What's made with recipes that were formulated by the original brewers, what was developed by hand. You know, even if it's scaled up, it's still a craft recipe versus something that was made in a lab somewhere, something that was developed to, as you said, maximize proteins, adding adjuncts to it and additives to it. One thing is real beer, and one thing is sort of a product.
Daniel, you have called craft beer drinkers a promiscuous bunch.
That's right.
What does that mean?
It means that the average
before or after they consume the beer.
It means that the average craft beer drinker really likes to try a wide variety of brands, of styles. There are certainly regulars at all of these local breweries. But at the same time, they appreciate kind of the diversity that craft beer offers.
Does that also make them a fickle bunch? So if they like Old Mecklenburg this year, maybe next year they'll go to Noda and just walk away from Old Mecklenburg and it continues down the line?
Gosh, I hope not.
There are trends. You know, there are trends like any other industry within craft beer where people latch on to certain styles. But for the most part, I do think craft beer consumers are one of the more open-minded demographics out there.
I think when Daniel talks about craft beer drinkers being a promiscuous bunch, that sort of points back to why Todd and I and why the brewers in Charlotte are such friends, is they're going to try us all. And if someone who usually drinks a national brand tries Noda first or tries OMB first and doesn't like it, they're much less likely to try the next brand. So we're counting on every one of us in Charlotte making quality beer. So they try us all.
Talk about the trend line, because you sell a lot of different beers at your shop, Jason. So talk about the trend line. Do people stick with a particular beer, or are they more adventuresome? They want to buy one beer this time, a different beer the next time. Is it always local? Are they learning through this process? Is there somebody to coach them through this process? Because we've mythicized wine. Wine, you know, we talk about where it tastes on the palate, and that intimidates people. Beer doesn't seem to be as intimidating.
No, I mean, we have people that they definitely want to try new beers every time they come in. It's a mix of local and just what's new, what's different. There's a subgenre, a sour beer, it's called, that we really, I personally love it, so we push it a lot. It sounds weird, like sour beer. That sounds horrible, but
sourdough bread,
traditional Belgian style that we find. People who never had really into craft beer, wine lovers love this going straight to sour sometimes, the acidity, the sharpness. So we find people are very adventurous, and they want to try and mix a local. Of course, everybody who comes in from out of town goes straight to the local section because, you know, you're in another city. You want to try that city's beer. And it's a sense of pride that I have that we have great local beers to offer people.
Wow. So let's talk about some of these local beers, because I know that each of you have a different profile, and you've set out to do it that way. Old Mecklenburg, as I understand it, sticks to more of a German approach.
Very much
beer.
So.
And you jokingly say in your bio that, Ryan, that you have learned to pronounce Reinheitsgebot. How do you say it really?
That's pretty good. Reinheitsgebot, yes.
Reinheitsgebot. It's a German word for...
It's the old German-style purity law. It means beer that only has, well, at the time, three, but eventually four ingredients: your malt, your water, your hops, and your yeast in the beer. No additives, no preservatives, no chemicals.
And that was what you set out to do here.
Absolutely.
And you can still do different varieties as you do.
Oh, absolutely.
Using those four ingredients.
With a skilled brewer, you can do a myriad of options. With just different ratios, different styles of malts, varietals of hops, you can change beer dramatically just using those core ingredients.
What's the approach at Noda?
We don't follow the German purity law. we love those who do, and we enjoy drinking their beers, and as I'm doing right now. But one of the reasons I got into home brewing, Mike, was the fact that it gave you an opportunity to kind of use your palate. Create a completely different picture than what you could be, what you would purchase if you had bought a beer in a grocery store. I would like one thing about one style of beer, maybe another thing about another. And I just, because I was actually putting a recipe together myself, I had the opportunity to take the strong points of each of my favorite styles and put them together and create things that were not available in the grocery store as a commercial version. Mm. And that was kind of the benefit of home brewing. Now, there were times where I'd like to try to replicate a particular beer that I thought was really well done, but by and large, most of the beers I made as a home brewer were ones that you would not find in the store. So when we opened up our brewery, many of the beers that we opened up with, and we continue to do now, are beers that you won't find somewhere else. They might use coconut, they might use chocolate products, they might be a sour beer, as Jason was talking about. We did a sour beer this summer, and I think people liked it, but I don't know that a lot of them were ready for it yet. So I think there's a lot of potential here in Charlotte as people start to become educated about different historic German styles, Belgian styles. that's good for Charlotte because there's a lot of stuff out there for us to do yet.
Well, you just mentioned Belgian, and you wrote about this, Daniel, in a column that the beer company or the brewery that moved into Old Mecklenburg's old space in Noda is taking a non-German approach. They're taking a Belgian approach to brewing beer. What is that approach? What's the difference?
It's really kind of anything goes with Belgian beer. And I'd say, I don't know, Todd might be better to weigh in on this, but I'd say Americans kind of fall, not in the Belgian styles, but kind of follow that philosophy more than any other country's philosophy, in that anything goes, herbs, fruit, as Jason mentioned, sours. That's kind of where most of those come from, wild yeast that kind of impart those sour notes, funky notes.
I think Belgians have are known for what they are because of the unique yeast styles that they have. Their yeast provide more flavor to the beer probably than any other styles out there. So a lot of times they'll do a beer with very minimal ingredients, maybe a little bit of sugar in there to pump up the alcohol content. But those the phenols, the esters that the yeast give off, along with the alcohol, of course, is what shapes the flavor profile of many Belgian beers and makes them unique.
You know, you have a philosophy here at Old Mecklenburg of no shortcuts. And you say premium quality beer requires premium quality ingredients, barley or wheat malt, hops, yeast, and pure water, those German purity ingredients.
I would actually argue that every brewery in Charlotte has the same standards.
But you say we will never, we do not and will never cheapen our beer with inferior ingredients like corn and rice. So, are Belgian beers inferior?
I don't think they use corn or rice.
Corn or rice.
Yeah, Anheuser-Busch is
a different approach.
They use very, very expensive candy sugar. So.
There are things you can put in beer that enhance the experience. There are things you can put in beer that cheapen the experience. A lot of breweries use ingredients that add to the beer and add a new flavor profile to the beer. Mm-hmm. Some of the larger names we know in the States add ingredients that actually create a shortcut to mass producing a product for cheaper.
When a person is just starting out, when they're venturing away from the six-pack that their father bought or their grandfather bought, and they walk into one of your places and they start tasting these new beers for the first time, what is their reaction? Is it an eye-opening experience? Is it one they have to warm to gradually? Does it depend on what beer they ordered?
I think a lot of times it has to do with their experiences. Do they enjoy trying different types of foods, whether it's Indian, Ethiopian, curry dishes? If they are, if they're open to new flavor experiences, I think a lot of times when they come into our brewery and the breweries here in Charlotte, they're going to find that most of the beers they try are going to be very good, and they'll find ones that are particularly go directly to their to the things they enjoy, whether they're rich malty beers, whether they're dry beers, or even sweeter beers. I think they're going to find something.
I know what dry wine is. I know what sweet wine is. What does that mean when you talk about beer that way?
Well, I think a lot of it has, I mean, it's directly relatable to wine, just as you said. Beers that are dry have a tendency that the yeast dry out the beer by eating a little more of the sugars that are left behind. And so what you find is a lighter-bodied beer that has a little more alcohol, perhaps, slightly, from what it normally would. The yeast have done a little more work in there. So the beer is a little thinner, maybe a little more refreshing. And where you go into the winter months and people want a little more heavier foods and a little more heavier beers. And, you know, one of the transition beers right now, Oktoberfest, and a Marzen or an Oktoberfest-style beer is a good example of it. It's a little bigger beer, has a little more heft to it, has a little more sweetness to it. And that comes from additional malt and also how the beer is brewed itself.
Jason, when people come into your shop, are they mostly regulars who are fairly well-versed in what good beer is and what the various different varieties of beer are? Or are you really helping newcomers and novices to step through this new experience?
It's definitely a mix. You get your people who they know what they want. You know, they come in, they're ready to buy whatever exactly they're looking for. We get a lot of novices, and it's great. My rule is it's a three-taste rule. You get a sample, first taste is going to shock your palate, especially if it's something you've never had before. Second taste, you kind of warm up a little bit. By the third taste, you should be able to feel exactly how that beer tastes. So that's my rule with new beers.
And what are you hearing from readers, Daniel? Because you write about beer all the time,
right?
Everywhere. What are you hearing from readers, and how do you do it? How do you write about beer all the time?
I have a very understanding wife. No, but really, I started the website, charlottebeer.com, I guess a little more than 3 years ago. Very few of the breweries were here, and there was still that demand to read about beer. And you've just seen that demand grow with the Observer. We've gone to 2 columns a month now, which is great. Creative Loafing does a really good job. Charlotte Magazine. All of these publications are doing a good job of covering beer and our local beer scene.
You, Todd, were an airline pilot. Your wife was a banker. You brewed really good home beer that people loved and told you they loved. And so you decided to cash in your 401ks and start this brewery. Looking back, were you just supremely confident or were you crazy?
I was definitely crazy. I think, as Ryan said before, I think, as when John Marino opened Old Mecklenburg, it was a leap of faith, too. I mean, we like to say that we all know that we're going to be supremely successful. And I do remember a television crew in visiting us just before we opened and asking us about our confidence level. And we said, we're going to be successful. And then when the news made it that evening and it was edited, it looked a lot less probable that we're going to be successful, at least according to the anchors on the news table. But I don't think they had really recognized the situation for my wife and I. We had made a commitment to opening this brewery. We're going to make great beer that Charlotte enjoyed, and it may not be the first batch we made. And if it wasn't, we would dump it out and we'd start over again. But we were supremely confident that if we were not successful up front, that we would be in the long run, because we weren't going to give up on the town, making good beer for the town and making good beer for our friends.
And you like West Coast-style beers. Is that what you're making at Noda?
I like all beers, whether they're made here in Old Mecklenburg or whether they're made in San Diego County. Typically, I favor the West Coast-style beers. They're hoppier. A lot of cases, they're a little drier. I experienced a lot of them in my travels. I would have long layovers on the West Coast or even in Belgium. That happened as well, too. So having the opportunity to try a lot of different styles kind of shaped the portfolio that we brew right now at Noda Brewing.
We have about a minute left in this segment, so brag on yourselves a little bit here, Ryan and Todd. I know both of your beers have won a lot of awards. Tell us some of those awards.
Our Mecktoberfest won silver nationally 2 years ago at the Great American Beer Festival. We've had a number of beers win awards at the state level in the Carolina Championships, and all that's nice, but when folks come back, that's the best awards you can ask for, is people come back and drink another one kind of thing. I think Todd would agree on that.
Yeah, you know, the awards are fine. They're certainly pleasant to receive, and I think it's more of a bragging right with your friends or fellow brewers around the country, but all it really matters is when you look out and you see, you know, 300 people sitting out and enjoying your beers. That's great. That's what matters.
Todd's being humble, and I won't let him. Their IPA won gold nationally this year in the hardest category at the World Beer Championship. So he's being humble. I'm not going to let him. He should talk about that.
And that will stop because our glasses are empty. We're coming right back.
More of our special edition of Charlotte Talks in just a moment here on 90.7 WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Alta Vista Wealth Management, providing personal investment solutions, planning, and advice. Committed to quality, Lorraine Eason now accepts new clients, 704-365-4867 or at altavistawealth.com. And Healthy Home Market, a locally owned, locally grown natural food store, announcing their new Plaza Midwood store is now open at 1330 Central Avenue. Details available at healthyhomemkt.com. Coming up next at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show, it's the Friday News Roundup. A panel of journalists will join Diane Rehm to discuss the week's top news. Attorney General Eric Holder has announced his resignation. Pressure mounts on Congress to pass a new authorization for strikes against ISIS. And a White House breach prompts a review of Secret Service protocol. All those stories and more on the Diane Rehm Show at 10 on 90.7 WFAE.
Outside of Las Vegas, the gaming industry is deep in the red, but that's not fazing investors in New Jersey. part of this is it's really the only hope for Atlantic City, because part of this proposal would produce $1 billion over 10 years.
I'm Kai Rizdal, rolling the dice in the Garden State. Next time on Marketplace, it's from 8 p.m.
Marketplace this evening at 6:30 on 90.7 WFAE, listener-funded public radio.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. We're talking about beer from Old Mecklenburg Brewery over here on Yancey Road. Ryan Self is with us. He is the director of sales for OMB. Todd Ford is the owner and head of production at Noda Brewing Company. Jason Glunt is the owner of Salud Beer Shop. He's wearing a Salud Hornets T-shirt, which is illegal. And
he hasn't been arrested yet, though.
And Daniel Hardis is the author of Charlotte Beer, A History of Brewing in the Queen City. One of the things that both of your breweries have been able to do really successfully is get your beers in almost all of the local restaurants and bars, including some of the chain restaurants. Mm-hmm. How difficult was that, and how remarkable is that? It seems to be remarkable to me.
Well, I can tell you 5 years ago, walking into a bar and saying, oh, we're a local beer, there was a lot of so what that came with that. That mindset has changed. It's changed the bar manager level. It's changed the restaurant level. It's changed, as you mentioned, to the corporate level, where they now, as craft beer becomes a more regional, local product, where people want something that's made in town, it's gotten easier. Those first few years were a struggle, as I know Todd knows as well.
I think really what it comes down to is the people that are before us now are the ones who make the decisions in the restaurants and bars. If they ask for the beer enough times, the bar manager and the owners are going to listen to them, and they're going to provide that product, whether it's a steak or a piece of fish or whether it's a locally crafted beer. They're going to have to listen to their audience.
Todd, how many phone calls have you gotten where a bar asks you, I don't know what your beer is, but I know I got to have it?
Yeah, it actually happens. It
really?
Doesn't have. It certainly didn't happen the first six to eight months we're open, but the last year or so, they're a lot more willing to trust the local option.
Do customers come in and ask for specific beers at your bottle shop, or do you go out and cultivate relationships with all these breweries and taste the beers and decide, I'll take that one, but I don't want that one?
Yeah, I mean, for us, we try to have the biggest selection we can in a small space. So we try to carry, if it's local beer, we try to carry all of it.
Okay.
That's available in package. And then we rotate our drafts constantly, so every draft is different. But we try to keep at least one or two locals on. And we want to tell people come from out of town, hey, where should I go? Well, you've been to Noda yet? You've been to OMB? You've been to Birdsong? You've been to Triple C? Go to as many tap rooms as you can and just kind of soak in the local scene. And people do it, man. People come and they try to tour it all while they're here.
You talked earlier about not seeing each other as competition. In fact, John Marino, who owns Old Mecklenburg, calls this co-opetition, which is a great word. The big players, I guess, do they consider you competition? Because, I mean, they have 99% of the market,
yeah,
but they'd like 100%.
I'm not sure they consider us competition just yet, but we're coming for them.
Because it's people like Budweiser, Miller, Coors that have 99% of the market. Would that be true in a Milwaukee? Would it be true in really northeastern and midwestern beer drinking towns, or is that something that's exclusive to this area because we're new at this?
No, I think it's changing everywhere. I mean, I think the more recent numbers point to craft nationwide around 10%. Is that about right, Todd?
Right. And I spent 2 weeks in Portland, Oregon recently, and I think right now they're probably the hotbed of craft beer, and they're probably around 35 to 45% craft. And in Oregon alone, that's pretty impressive. And you're right. If we continue to grow at that rate, the larger companies are going to see us as more than just a nuisance. They're going to see us competition.
Well, they'll buy you.
They won't buy us. at least
nor us.
We're happy and willing to show them how to make tasty beer if they want to come over. That's not a problem. But they won't buy us because our passion is to make beer locally and craft it for our friends.
I mean, if
here.
They wanted to, could they do it? I mean, could they do it on a nationwide mass scale? Could they make
beer? Well, they're doing it already. They're trying to buy these breweries up, and they try to find, you know, but it shows that they're scared. They see the tide is turning and people's tastes are changing. But at the end of the day, there's so many passionate people across the nation for craft beer that they can try to buy as many breweries as they want.
Yep.
They're never going to catch up. I mean, San Diego County, I was in San Diego a couple months ago. They have 99 breweries in San Diego County. 99. Wow. And they're all, when I was there, they were all seemed to be doing pretty well. Yeah. I mean,
well, that leads me to a question about saturation, because I think a couple of years ago we had none. We left the 90s and a bunch of breweries shut down, and then you guys started coming along and popping up. And I wasn't kidding in the beginning when I said that it's almost every week or two we hear about a new brewery opening or planning to open or somebody moving into a larger space to meet up with demand. How big can this get before you reach a saturation point where you've super served the craft beer drinkers out there?
I personally think there's no solid top to this, as long as the people who are coming into the business want to produce something new and unique. If they're trying to make their version of Copper or their version of Hop Drop and Roll, which is one of our beers, I wish them luck, but I think they're missing the mark. The secret of their success is going to be based upon making their mark their way. As long as they bring something new and unique, I think the potential is there for a lot more breweries to come to Charlotte. Once we start trying to copy each other and take away each other's customers because we're making a product that's very similar to the other breweries here in town, I think it marks the maturation of the brewery scene.
Are the raw materials that you... I'm sorry, if you wanted to comment on that,
go ahead.
Are the raw materials that the local brewers are using, are they locally sourced raw materials, or do you have to go way outside the region to get some of these things?
You know, in many cases, there are a few ingredients that we can source locally here in North Carolina. It's important to our customers, and we try to do that. It doesn't happen very often. What we're finding is we want, in our effort to make the best beer possible, we're looking for the best ingredients. And many times the barley is malted and grown in Germany or in Great Britain, and the hops come from the northwest part of our country or from Europe. And if we use another product, what we're finding is we're just making a product that's not as good as what we could do, and that's just not what we're here to do. So we want to use local ingredients and use local people, but we're not going to do it if it jeopardizes the quality of the product.
Is it? And you want beer to be fresh. So is it possible for demand to outstrip your ability to supply it?
Oh, it has many times already.
Really?
Absolutely.
How often does that happen?
Todd, you want to speak to this one?
You know, when a brewery opens, they obviously open with a small amount of production space. And as you can see with our friends here at Old Mecklenburg, they continued to fill out that building for the last four and a half years, and now they moved into a much larger facility. They did that because the beer was selling and the beer was demanded by the public, and they needed more space to produce that beer. And we're finding the same is true with us as well. We've added many more tanks. We've filled up our location, and we're looking to move here to a larger production facility to continue to fulfill the demand.
And to your question about a saturation point in this market, I think that's the most rewarding part of what we're doing is we just opened up a much larger facility. While we did so, our peers here in town weren't suffering. Notice growing as fast as they can. Birdsong is growing as fast as they can. I know Triple C is expanding their facility very soon. So we're not cannibalizing each other. We're taking market share away from the big guys and creating a true Charlotte beer scene.
Yeah,
and the crowd goes wild. I don't know if you can hear them or not, but the crowd goes wild. Jason.
Well, I think demand is good for craft beer. Sometimes when you can only make so much of the beer, it creates this crazy demand, and people are searching it out. People come from out of town. I heard they only make a barrel of this. I need to get this. They only make, you know, whatever. I mean, when Hop Drop won their award, we were selling 30 cases of Hop Drop every 5 days.
Wow.
And we're a 900-square-foot beer store.
You know, when Hops opened up and South End Brewery opened up, and I don't know whether Rock Bottom still brews.
They do. They're still uptown.
But that seemed to be the beginning of something. It felt that way. And then it all stopped. Could this be a boom-bust cycle kind of business, do you think?
I don't think so in this case. I think the country just wasn't ready for it in the early 90s. The brewing itself wasn't a novelty. There were plenty of brewers who took it very seriously and made quality products, and many are still around nationally. But I think it's hard to go back, you know, to bigger brands. I'm not going to call any brand out, but it's kind of hard to go back once you get into craft.
once you've tasted real beer, it's hard to go back to the...
We've had a regular here who we knew, who we talked to, who told us for years and years he was a Coors Light drinker.
Uh-huh.
And he for six
not
months...
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Oh, It is what it is. And for 6 to 8 months, he was drinking our beer here, and he told myself and John, our owner, this story of he was at a neighbor's barbecue, and the only beer being served was the old kiddie pool full of Coors Light on ice, and said he cracked one open, and he said, oh, for old time's sake, I'll have the old school beer. And he said, I couldn't finish half of it. And so I think Todd and I will both say we're very happy to be ruining palates across the city for poor beer.
Now, Jason, you're a bottle shop. You're not a brewery, but you're about to become one. You're about to open, a nano brewery?
Yes, we're going to open a one-barrel nano brewery, which is 31 gallons. We're brewing beer just for our shop. It's completely different from what these guys are doing. We're fancy homebrew setup.
I'm brewing beer just for your shop too, so I don't know how that's any different.
That's what I read, that you're not only brewing it yourself, you're inviting in some of the head brewers of other breweries.
Yeah,
I'm going to brew one barrel for it.
I'm trying to convince Chad if Todd will allow him to come brew a batch for this. And Todd from Final Floor is a really good friend of mine. He's going to come help us out. We've got a couple local homebrewers who are been homebrewing for 10, 15 years, and they do a lot of wild and sour ales, which we want to do. We want to do a lot of experimentation just because we can. If it's not good, we can,
and toss it.
Yeah, I mean, it's but, we're brewing beer for our shop. We're trying to add something different to our store and create this cool atmosphere. And our neighborhood is, there's Birdsong, Heist, Noda, Free Range is opening soon. There's four breweries on our street in a 10-block radius, and it's great.
But if you hit on something that people really like, what's the turnaround time? How do you do it again?
That's the problem that we're going to figure out. I mean, for us, for what we're doing, fermentation control, stuff like that, trying to create the same beer is going to be really hard, especially with wild ales. You're doing wild yeast and funky stuff. It's going
to
change.
Does that make it easier to market it because it's rare and it's going to be gone soon because it's only a limited quantity? Or does it make it harder to market?
In the crab beer world, it probably makes it easier. Truthfully, because if it's rare in a craft beer, people run to it.
Well, take it from me. When you run out of that beer that they really love, they're going to tell you all about it and how upset they are that they can't get that beer back.
Now, I'm told that there are big brewers from California, Colorado, places like that, coming here to North Carolina to brew beer. Is that because they want their beer to be fresher on the East Coast? Or is it because we have this beer culture of experienced people in the jobs of beer making that they can raid and bring into their shops? What's going on there?
I think predominantly is they find an economic value to being in North Carolina. If you're shipping beer from Chico, California to New York City, it certainly makes more sense to brew the beer here in North Carolina and truck it from North Carolina to New York. We as brewers would like to think that a lot of it has to do with the fact that we have a really super market here for craft beer, and I think that is part of it as well. But I think, obviously, the economics of and logistics of beer transport have a lot to do with the fact that many of these breweries are moving to North Carolina.
And here's something that people don't know. You guys are at a distinct disadvantage. I was going to ask you if you had any plans down the road for exporting your beer to other places. It's very difficult for you, by law, to do that in North Carolina. It's easy for Coors to come in here and ship mass quantities out, but you can't. Why not?
Well, we're tied to some very antiquated laws here in North Carolina that tie us to distributors. If we get to a certain size, that limit how much beer we can ship across the state. I think most of the breweries, if not all the breweries in Charlotte, are pretty committed to staying local. No one's trying to take over the Eastern Seaboard here. But we always say, so you mentioned Sierra Nevada and New Belgium are two of the breweries that are relocating here in North Carolina. So breweries out of California, breweries out of Colorado. And we always say that, the reason they got to that size, that they needed an East Coast hub was, one, they made great beer, but two, they were born and raised in states that have great beer laws that let them flourish. So we are succeeding now somewhat despite the laws of our state, not because of.
Are you getting any help? Do you see a light at the end of the tunnel? Is anybody going to change the laws?
Well, just the fact that we're here tonight discussing it is an indication that we're taking a step forward. People are knowing a little bit more about the struggles within the state. The state has some good laws that allow breweries to open and distribute their beers locally by themselves. That's one of the reasons I think that we have 10 breweries in planning in Charlotte right now. But what happens is once those breweries become moderately successful, like our friends here at Old Mecklenburg and maybe one day ourselves, we come up to a hard cap that says basically you can no longer distribute your brand, not even one drop of it. You have to give all of it to a wholesaler, a distributor who is now representing maybe 50 brands, not just one, but 50. And that's a very difficult thing to do if you've grown your business organically since the very beginning, really dedicated your time and your effort, and your employees have done the same, and now you have to give your baby away.
Plus, the excise taxes on beer in North Carolina have gone up amazingly.
Well, that's a very difficult subject to, I wish we could solve that immediately. unfortunately, our state has budget deficits, it seems like, every year, and we want to give teachers raises. So it's difficult to bring up a subject that's as sensitive as state excise tax. But we have, I think it's the fifth or sixth highest tax in the nation right now. And so it will, if it's not already throttling back beer sales and beer development here in the state, it will eventually.
Asheville was named as Beer City USA. I'm not sure if that's true or not, but it was by the readers of some publication. They obviously have a beer culture. Do we have a beer culture in Charlotte?
Absolutely. Absolutely we do. And look out here right now. I mean, look at our crowd that's sitting out here right now. That's our beer culture, is who came out for this. And very much back to Todd's point, we are one of the highest five excise tax states in the country. And yet I will argue that North Carolina is the best state in the Southeast for craft beer. And I'll argue that point with anybody. So that's incredible.
And you get the last word. Ryan Self with Old Mecklenburg Brewery, Todd Ford with Noda Brewing Company, Jason Glunt with Salud Beer Shop in Noda, and Daniel Hardis, author of Charlotte Beer, A History of Brewing in the Queen City. Thank you all for the hour. Appreciate it.